WTUL News and Views is public affairs programming that brings you news and other thought-provoking content on WTUL New Orleans every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 to 10 a.m., featuring Democracy Now! At 9 o'clock. News and Views is glad to bring you programming that offers fresh and progressive perspectives on New Orleans and international issues. You can email them at WTULnews@gmail.com, follow them on Twitter at WTULnews, like them on Facebook, or call them at 504-457-VIEW. That's 457-8439. Past interviews can be found at WTULnews.tumblr.com.
Good morning, I'm Matt Olson. We have a guest joining us on News and Views this morning, Jeffrey Goodman, an urban planner who lives in New Orleans. Welcome to News and Views.
No, thanks for having me.
He participated at a teach-in on the impacts of short-term rentals on housing costs and availability here in New Orleans that was put on by Jane Place Sustainability Initiative in European Descent, that's D-I-S-S-E-N-T, this past weekend, in anticipation of the City Planning Commission meeting this Tuesday at City Hall, which will decide whether and or how to regulate short-term rentals. Maybe you could help us, Jeffrey, to begin with, you know, how do we understand these short-term rentals? Who's promoting them? Where do we see them, you know, to familiarize the listener?
Sure. So a short-term rental in New Orleans, as it's currently defined, is renting out any space for less than 30 days. That is pretty broad. It's a pretty broad statement. It's unclear whether, you know, if your mom came and stayed on your couch and gave you $100 and left after a weekend, whether you just committed a crime. That's fair. And so you have legal hotels, which are commercial enterprises. They are located in very specific zones. And you have bed and breakfasts, which are their own category, and they also have zoning regulations against them, which means they have to be in a certain place. They have to be spaced a certain amount. You have to have someone live on site. A lot of those have been around for quite some time. There's actually a ban on creating new ones in the French Quarter, into the CBD, into the Marigny.
That doesn't mean owner-occupied in a way that could be an employee.
I think it theoretically could be an employee, but someone has to live on site who is the operator of the bed and breakfast. And then what you've seen, you know, this has existed for a really long time, but it's really taken off in the last, you know, 5 years because of these online platforms. Through Airbnb and VRBO and probably about 20 others, you've had illegal short-term rentals, which are people who are renting out space in their home, not getting a license, not probably able to get a license. And now we have, I don't know, probably about 5,000 listings, something like that, across the city. And within that are a lot of different types of people. And so you have people who've put up listings for Mardi Gras. They're going out of town. They're going to try to get $50. They're doing their thing. You've got people in the middle who maybe have two sides of a double, and they live on one side and they're renting out the other just as like a way to get a little more money. And then you have people who are taking it pretty seriously and being very commercial about it, who may own multiple properties across the city, may not even be based here. Maybe a property management company. There are several major, major listing companies operating in New Orleans that are based in other countries, that are based in other cities, and are basically running property as a kind of distributed hotel. And that's one of the big things up for debate tomorrow at the City Planning Commission. But the bigger thing is they're not really paying taxes because they're not legal. And you can't really pay taxes on something that's illegal. I mean, you can, but I mean, you can write them a check. But, you know, they don't have to follow the same safety rules that hotels or bed and breakfasts have to do in terms of handicap access, in terms of fire safety, whether they have sprinklers or not, whether they have second exits or not. And they don't, not just because they're illegal, but they don't follow zoning rules, so they can be located kind of anywhere they want right now because they're illegal, which means they are in residential neighborhoods. They're in places that I think a lot of people didn't expect to have tourists coming in and out. So you have a lot of different kind of users, and then you have a lot of different kind of uses. So you have people who are very temporary about what they're doing, or maybe even put a listing up and it's never been booked, all the way to people who are very commercial. And so it's hard to draw lines within that to in kind of figure out what is going to be acceptable in the city and what isn't. That's been a really, really big discussion. It's been really, really difficult because everyone has an opinion of what is going to be the best way forward. And some of that has to do with what their current sort of stake is in the market. If you're someone who operates 20 properties in the city, you're going to view rules very differently than if you're the neighbor of a house that is hosting bachelor parties every weekend, which there are some, and those people are not happy. Yeah.
Of course, one of the ways that the companies themselves situate how they can resolve problems and, you know, they can self-regulate. How has their position come up, you know, in if there are complaints by neighbors about, well, a bachelor party, for instance?
Yeah.
How does that get resolved or not get resolved, or where does the chip land? Yeah.
Well, the companies are very clear when you sign up, either as a host or a guest, in their terms of service. They are not responsible for anything. They are very, very direct in that. They are not responsible for hosts or guests following local zoning or quality of life or any sort of rules. So you sign your life away, basically, when you sign up for those. They have taken steps, Airbnb especially, to try to seem like they are doing something. So, for example, there's now a service, I don't know if it's totally rolled out in New Orleans yet, but it's in other cities, mm-hmm. where they've set up a hotline. And so a neighbor or guest or whatever could call them. The problem with that is Airbnb doesn't have a police force. They don't have a code enforcement officer in every city. So I'm not sure what really happens. I think they just make a note. I don't know. And I don't think they pass that information on to the cities to actually solve the problem directly. That's the big issue with the listing companies is they're making a lot of money. They're worth a lot of money. Airbnb is valued higher than Marriott. So you have the most valuable hotel chain in the world doesn't own a single hotel. Right.
And how do they make the money? What is it, just a slice off the top of every?
Yeah, Airbnb every night? Makes the money by taking a percentage of the booking fee. Other companies do it differently. Some of them are a little bit more like listing sites where you it's like a, you know, essentially a glorified classified section where you pay to put a listing up, mm-hmm. and then you just have whatever that cost is whatever the cost is. Yeah. But I think they're all moving to the Airbnb model because it's more lucrative. Yes. And so those companies have been, for all their talk, and you can find, and I've had to read so many things that are these really pretty grandiose statements about what they want to do and how they want to be regulated and how they want to work with cities. The cities have not really had a great time dealing with this issue. Airbnb has been very, very obstinate in its goals and has spent a lot of money on lobbyists, on organizing, and to try to really make the industry as deregulated as possible. Part of that is, honestly, they don't have... If their choices are they have to follow different rules in every city, or they can spend a lot of money on lobbyists and not have to and have one system that works everywhere, they'll do the latter because they're not dumb. They're smart business people. They know what's up. But they are not a company that really has a lot of cities' interests in heart. They have their interests in heart, and so it's been very frustrating. You've seen a lot of cities around the country, around the world, grow extremely, extremely frustrated with Airbnb and had to have these debates about regulation over and over again that become more and more fraught, more and more kind of high-pitched. There was a $10 million civic election in San Francisco, like just on and on and on. You see these protests in Barcelona. You know, it's people get very, very upset about this issue because it's their homes. It's their neighborhoods. Like, sure. People feel strongly about it.
Well, it sounds like you've had experience or have been reading about how this operates in other cities. Let's get to the local part of it. You know, how is this really affecting New Orleans, and what kind of statistics are out there, data about what kind of neighborhoods are being most affected, where it's growing into?
Yeah, so in New Orleans, there's, like I said, probably about 5,000 listings. No one actually knows because we don't get the data from the companies. And so within that, there are probably several thousand listings that are pretty active. There are, and most of those are for whole homes. So whether someone lives there or not, it's a little hard to say from the data that we do have, that people have gotten through scraping the websites, they're doing a little bit of investigative work through some leaks and stuff. But the thing that a lot of people are concerned about is the effect on housing. And New Orleans is a tremendous housing crisis right now. For, you know, people to be able to find an affordable unit, it's very difficult. We need probably, 30,000 more affordable units over the next 10 years. And when I say affordable, I mean you can... The federal government says you shouldn't spend really more than a third of your income on housing. And I don't think there are many people who are renters in the city who qualify for that. So, you know, we're not talking about necessarily subsidized housing. We're not talking Section 8. We're not talking that. It's literally just, are you spending more than a third of your income on housing? And we need a lot more units to help people find places to live. Short-term rentals from what we can tell from the data that's available, from the anecdotes we hear, is having an effect on the availability of housing, and especially the availability of housing in some pretty prime neighborhoods. So it's not surprising there's a lot of stuff in the French Quarter. A lot of those are vacation homes that, honestly, I'm not sure would even have a long-term tenant because they're, you know, it's Brad Pitt's home or something.
Right. Like they're bought initially just to be...
But then you look into the Marigny, into the Bywater, Treme, and into Mid-City. Those neighborhoods have real rental housing pressure on them. They don't have a lot of rental housing that really comes up very often, especially a place like the Marigny. There is not a lot of rental units. There's a lot of homeowners, and there's a lot of this. And so I think there's a lot of fear that and a little bit of evidence that the money is too good for property owners, and that if they had a choice between renting to someone for $1,000 a month and making $1,000 a weekend, it's a pretty easy choice. And so I think a lot of the housing advocates in the city really feel that we can't lose any units to something. And I think it fits into a broader discussion about the priorities, not just of the city government, but of the city. You know, kind of tourists versus locals, of course, is a classic, classic New Orleans debate. And, you know, if Airbnb is selling this idea of New Orleans as the kind of New Orleans you see when you see a commercial for it, if we make it very difficult for people who cook the food, who play the music, who make the art, who drive your taxi, who do whatever, if make it difficult for them to live in some of these neighborhoods, what are we really selling, right? Yeah.
I'm here with Jeffrey Goodman, an urban planner who lives in New Orleans. This is WTUL New Orleans News and Views this morning. I'm Matt Olson. We're talking about short-term rentals in New Orleans, and in anticipation of the City Planning Commission meeting that's happening this Tuesday. In relation to that, would legalization or regulation of these short-term rentals change the impact that they're having? I mean, certainly it would accrue revenue for the city, and that's their interest. But what impact would it really have if the numbers you're suggesting, you know, if it's $1,000 a weekend versus $1,000 for a month, at least in the Marigny?
Yep.
That seems to me like they would continue that practice. Maybe less so as you get further out from the city center.
Sure. It depends on what sort of regulation we choose to do. So right now there are different kinds of permits that the City Planning Commission staff has kind of discussed. And at least two of them require someone to live on site, and to make it your actual principal residence. It's wherever you're getting your homestead exemption, it's where you live. And whether that's the other side of a double or your own home, if you require that kind of principal residence, which is confusingly not the principal residence permit category, it's classic confusion. You know, if you ensure that people are living in the homes that they're renting out, one, it builds a lot of inherent accountability, so people aren't going to really just trash places or have a lot of bachelor parties. I mean, unless they really want to party. But also it means you can't speculate in the marketplace, right? You can't have 20 properties. You can have one, right? And you have to live there. And so that, I think, is going to be the biggest sort of choice within some of the details of that regulation, which is if you push these people who've tried to commercialize it out of this industry, if we say that this industry is really for people who are not very professional, who are doing this either to make a little extra money or do this on very short-term basis around major events, that's, I think, more acceptable to a lot of people in these neighborhoods, because that's something that people have done kind of forever. The other part of it, the people who are doing whole home, full-time, no one lives there, it's totally an investment property, that is a bigger change, and one that maybe we're not totally, a lot of neighborhoods are not totally down with. Mm-hmm. And so the simplest way to get that is to just require someone to live on the site that they're renting out. The biggest part of that, though, is enforcement. Mm-hmm. Right now we have very, very limited enforcement for a variety of reasons. And so you can make the rules whatever you want, but if they're not enforced, then they're not enforced. They're pointless. And so that's actually where a lot of cities are moving right now, is to try to figure out a better system for doing enforcement, and one that actually involves the listing companies. And that has led to some lawsuits in other cities. Airbnb has a very creative defense as to why they can't patrol their listings. So,
well, what's your experience, or what have you seen happening in other cities that has worked to effectively, what is the progress of other cities in taking on this issue? Because New Orleans is coming not entirely late, but a little late.
But it's maybe not totally a bad thing, because we can learn from some of the experiences. So some of the cities that were way ahead of us on this have had to go back, and actually almost all of them have had to go back because they've had such problems. So Austin, for example, had an emergency city council meeting in February, where they decided to eliminate the type of permit that I was just describing, this whole home full-time permit, because they've had so many complaints from it. Because you have people who come for all the festivals in Austin, and they, you know, they're 20 dudes in a house, and they party, and it's like, these people live in normal neighborhoods, and you know, they were all upset. So they've sunsetted those permits. Those permits will no longer exist in a couple years. San Francisco just had to do, they passed an ordinance that they had worked with Airbnb on, because they are a tech city and Airbnb is based there. They had a $10 million election that was almost all spent by Airbnb about sort of a citizen-led change to those rules. That was defeated, so Airbnb won that. And then, because of just how difficult it's been in San Francisco, the city supervisors amended their law again. Airbnb then sued them over the details of that law, and now San Francisco has amended their law a third time. That lawsuit is being heard in 3 weeks. In Europe, you have places that, because of their land use control, you have Barcelona that said, if we catch you illegally short-term renting, we will seize your property and rent it out as an affordable unit. You can't do that in America. You really, really can't.
Because of the private property provisions of the Constitution.
Basically, and takings laws. Yeah. Berlin, though, you know, also said that they'll just fine people like 100,000 euros per day or something, and it's not surprisingly, you know, 3,000 listings disappeared the next day. We're limited by how much we can fine people. You have other cities in America, though. Anaheim in California, they own their own power and water company, and so they said if you're caught illegal short-term renting, they will just shut off your utilities. And like, these are extreme. These are extreme things. And I hope we don't have to necessarily do extreme things. I'd much prefer a normal operating city system. But that shows you how kind of serious people get in other cities about these things because of how difficult it's been to do enforcement. And that it leads to these kind of, you know, really intensive operations. I think Paris has like a basically this like squad that flies around the city and busts down doors and do all these things. I don't think anyone in New Orleans really wants that. And then that's the problem, is that we don't have a lot of resources. And so even if we did have the resources to do the enforcement as it's kind of created right now, I think most people would say we should probably put those resources into other bigger problems. We have blight problems, we have vacant land problems, we have all these other things. And so we need to be really smart about how we're going to do enforcement and how we're going to make sure that system is one that people will follow. I mean, we can't have 10% compliance. We need 80 or 90% compliance, and no city in America has really gotten there yet.
From San Francisco, you know, what were the changes that in the laws as they started to where they've ended up? Because that seems the most intense case in the United States.
Yeah, it's a really difficult case too because of the company's headquarters is there, Airbnb's headquarters, and so they will fight tooth and nail about it because they can't lose in their own hometown. And so the original rules back that Airbnb helped them with said that you could rent out up to, I think it's 120 days, but there's no way of actually checking that. If the companies aren't sending data to the city, how many days have you listed? No one knows.
Right. There's an issue of transparency with these companies.
Yeah. Right. And so stuff like day limits become really, really difficult if you're not getting data and they don't want to share data. So it just didn't work. It was all over the place. It was kind of a mush. And so the amended ones, after all this nonsense, you have to, I think you have a maximum number of days you can rent out a year still, or you have to live there, I think, 270 days, whatever. The big thing, the thing that caused the lawsuit, is San Francisco said it is a crime to advertise a listing that doesn't have a permit. And if we see you doing that, we're going to sue both the person who listed it and the listing platform. And we'll fine them, you know, $1,000 a day per violation. So if you're talking about a city like San Francisco where probably 3,000 or 4,000 units aren't permitted, that's a significant chunk of change every day, right? That's what Airbnb sued over. And not to bore people with constitutional law, they sued as a First Amendment suit. They said that according to the Communications Decency Act of 1996, which, as you know, the internet in 1996 and today is basically the same, they are a content provider. And the listings on their service are content. And the CDA from 1996 says that a content provider is not liable in any way for the sayings on their site.
Akin to the New York Times.
Yeah. And this has been used, or comment sections or Tumblr or something. Mm-hmm. This has been used by a lot of disparate internet companies that you would view as very commercial. Amazon, eBay. They have all claimed First Amendment rights under this thing. And so for the city to say you can't post this listing is to say you can't use your speech. And so the city has now amended that because of this lawsuit to say you can post whatever you want. We're going to let you speak your mind through this weird platform. But as soon as there's a commercial transaction, you have to do all these things. Because commercial speech is much more tightly regulated than free speech. It's, again, it's this weird workaround that the city attorneys honestly, they've got a lot of other things to do. Airbnb's attorney's got nothing else to do. This is what they do. That's why they're paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's just, it makes it very, very difficult for cities to regulate any internet company and get them to follow local rules if they can just claim that they are just this kind of cloud that things fall out of.
Good morning. If you're just tuning in, this is News and Views programming on WTUL New Orleans, 91.5 FM. I'm Matt Olson. We're here with Jeffrey Goodman, urban planner who lives in New Orleans. And we're discussing short-term rentals in the city. Jeff, if we do learn from some of these other examples across the U.S. and other cities, you know, what is on the table at the City Planning Commission tomorrow, Tuesday at 1:30 p.m.?
Sure. So the city, probably about 10 months ago now, asked for a report from the City Planning Commission. The City Planning Commission responded by giving their staff a directive to come up with basically everything they could think of that made sense in the city. The staff prepared a 180-page report. If you need to fall asleep, it's available. And it has a lot of interesting things in there. The biggest thing is it chooses housing, and specifically kind of housing residents, as the main lens it's going to kind of try to divvy up this market. It makes some sense that it chose to say that there are a lot of different kind of users. We want to separate them out. And so they have four different permit classes. One is a temporary permit, which allows you up to 30 days a year. And you can just kind of do whatever. And that's obviously less expensive. There's a accessory unit permit that allows you to do, for example, the other side of your double. It needs to be in the building that you live in, that you own, I think, or your own bedroom, or a bedroom in your own unit. That's one. The third one is called principal residential, which is a misnomer, and that one would allow you to do full-time, full home. You don't live here. You live anywhere else. Who knows where you live?
So it's principal residential for the person who's coming, not for
it's related to the zoning. Renting. Yeah, it's related to the zoning categorization. But yeah, okay. No, that one is the one that's honestly the most controversial. Mm. And then there's commercial, which is has its own weirdness. It's related a little bit to the kind of zoning of it. It mostly deals with very large developments in the CBD, and some of the big things that are coming online in Mid-City or even in the Bywater. That one has its own issues, but people are a little less up in arms about it.
Because it's so localized? Because it's only happening in the CBD right now?
Yeah, I think it's just that it's not... Because that one's really related more to fairly large developments, people are like, well, it's going to be kind of internal in there.
Hotel,
I don't know.
Hotel style? Like, could this pop up on Bayou St. John?
So the new Sydney Torres-led development that's in Mid-City, which is huge. It's on the other side of the bayou. I think it's at the end of the Lafitte Greenway. That one could have a bunch of short-term rentals within it. And I think people just aren't as excited about it as the ones that are, the ones they deal with because they're in their neighborhood already. It's a very kind of... planning term-esque. Mm-hmm. It's its own little category. It's fine. It's got its own issues, but that's not the one that people really talk about very much.
Sure.
So the each one of those categories has their own sort of rules about them. There's some things that are similar. They all have to pay taxes. They all have to register with the city. But the principal residential ones, the ones that are full-time, full home, they have certain spacing requirements, which means you can only have two per block according to these rules, which is similar to current bed and breakfasts. They have to go through a different process to get their permits and all these other things. And that is the kind of general framework you would set up. So... at the CPC tomorrow, it's actually the vote of a discussion that they had months ago. that is the result of another discussion and a vote they had months ago. The CPC voted on the original report, sent it to the City Council's Economic Development or Community Development Committee. That committee was asked, as a personal privilege, by the mayor's office to send it back to the CPC to include this whole home full-time rental category for more study, which had been taken out by the City Planning Commission before.
Taken out meaning they weren't
They did not recommend it to the City Council
as to approve them.
So the CPC got this report, which had all these categories. They specifically took that one out and said, we're not recommending this, to send it to the City Council, because it's the City Council who will actually create an ordinance. And so the report right now is a report and has recommendations. It has the kind of framework for an ordinance, but it's not the actual legal language. Mm-hmm. So this vote tomorrow is about that report that's been added back in with the full-time things. It could be taken out tomorrow. It could be totally scrapped. It could be amended so everyone has to wear underpants on their head. I mean, you could do kind of anything you want, or they could just straight vote, right? And so it's going to be a rowdy event. There are a lot of people who feel very, very passionate about this, kind of on both sides. The CPC, I think, is skeptical, as based on their previous vote, about these kind of very commercial style short-term rentals. But clearly someone, I think, in the mayor's office, maybe the mayor himself, either wants more information about them or is trying to send a message that this is something that needs to happen in the city. I don't know.
Yeah, who are the players on both sides of this issue, including the longstanding hotel interest downtown?
Yes.
Or they seem to be the first to jump on the issue, more so than even, or with a louder voice, I should say, than the homeowners.
Well, I would say actually a lot of it came from the neighborhood organizations.
Okay.
Some of them are, this is kind of what they do. Some of them, they're a little more staid and kind of came out of this because of just people's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it really only takes kind of one bad experience to say, I'm upset with this whole issue. Whereas there are a lot of hosts in the city. I mean, I always have to say this. There are a lot of hosts in the cities who are not these villains, who are not out there kicking people out of their homes, mm-hmm. and stroking their mustache and talking about how they're destroying New Orleans. Oh, there are plenty of really, really nice people who are not causing problems. The problem is there are some people who are causing a significant amount of problems. And so you had these neighborhood groups, which are, I think, were interpreting what they were hearing and seeing in some of their properties. They're like, oh, that no one actually lives there, right? And like, this property just came out of nowhere and it's been fixed up and no one lives there. And then they've, on their kind of anti-short-term rental side, eventually the Convention and Visitors Bureau has come out, I believe, against it. And obviously the hotel industry is not a big fan of short-term rentals because they view it as competition. I don't, in a place like New Orleans, which is so convention-driven, I don't know how huge a thing is, but they view it as a threat, so I'm not gonna tell them how to run their business. so that's their side. And then eventually housing people, too, kind of came around on that. On the other side, you have a local group that... I'm slowly falling apart. A local group that is made up of the hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a pretty diverse group as well, because you have people who do have 30 properties. And you have people who are, the kind of little old lady who's making it happen. Sometimes they're the same people. And so they are obviously advocating for both a system that is allows them to be legal, but within that, a lot of different views of what that could mean. So the people who have 30 properties maybe want a different thing than someone who just rents out a bedroom for Mardi Gras. But they're trying to find ways to make their case and explain why it's important for them to be able to do what they want to do. And I think they've struggled a little bit because it's a harder argument to make than just like, our neighborhoods are important and housing is important. That's... tourism is a harder sell sometimes to people in neighborhoods, right? Sure. That are not used to it, especially, you know, that's the big thing that I think is the main piece of friction is a lot of neighborhoods that have a lot of short-term rentals are not neighborhoods that have really ever had a lot of tourists.
Yeah, so if you're just tuning in, this is News and Views on WTUL New Orleans. I'm Matt Olson. We're here with Jeffrey Goodman, urban planner in New Orleans, talking about short-term rentals. One of the important aspects that you're bringing up is, you know, how the tourist economy mm-hmm. is related to short-term rentals. And even though you have hotels
yep.
against it, in many cases, mm-hmm. Because, of course, that's part of their business. They want to have a greater stake in that business. We're finding that these kind of alternate housing situations in neighborhoods that previously haven't experienced it is becoming popular. You know, what are some of the reasons behind why it's so popular, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different reasons why it's a big thing. I think there's a lot of different variety in terms of the units available. So you can have these big parties or stay with your friends or, you know, bring your family or whatever. I know there's a lot of things that happen around Tulane, around graduation in this neighborhood because people want to be close to where they are. And that's the other big thing is they're located in different neighborhoods. A lot of times hotels are in a business district or tied to the convention center. And because they're in different neighborhoods, people feel like, oh, I'm off the beaten track. I'm not one of those tourist losers who are just going to Bourbon Street. I get to see the real New Orleans. That's somewhat true, I guess. If you're staying in, you know, the Bywater, you're seeing a very different part of the city than if you just stayed at the Sheraton on Canal Street. But, yeah, that's the kind of view of it. The price is not necessarily different, depending. Because some of them are pretty luxe. But it's just a kind of a different experience. It's a niche experience. So I think it's one of its big things is why... and also, I think the Airbnb platform makes it safe for people to... I mean, that's their pitch, essentially. That you're not just getting something randomly off Craigslist, or you're not just getting something that you don't know is safe, whether it is actually safe or not.
Right, because, you know, I came up in those early internet days where couch surfing was mm-hmm. a very prominent part of... traveling, you know, affordably across the country. And the only kind of safety mechanism you have is other people's reviews of the place where you stayed.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Airbnb has resisted regulation. And it's also led to their other major lawsuit that's going on right now, which is about racial discrimination, which is Airbnb, the trust they build through that platform is through a profile with your name and your photograph. And there were two huge Harvard Business School studies that are fantastic by Professor Ben Edelman, who found that if you are a host and a minority, if you had the same apartment with the same amenities in the same location as a white person, that white person could charge 15% more over the course of a year just because of the race of the people in the photographs. On the flip side of that, as a guest, and this is the lawsuit, the study showed that if you use a name or a picture that is identifiable as a race that is not white, you are rejected in asking for a booking, you know, 15 or 20% more, even if you just have a name, not even a picture.
So these things mirror the kinds of discrimination that we see for normal rentals, which is what the Greater New Orleans Fair Housing Action Center works on.
Absolutely. And that's the problem with this, I mean, obviously because it's pure discrimination, is this is another example of Airbnb really trying to figure out how to be both kind of global and local at the same time. And their discrimination piece is real. And it's not entirely Airbnb's fault. People are racist. The issue with that, though, is, you know, their response to this has been, we're going to set up a task force. We hired Eric Holder, the former attorney general, because you have the money to do that. The and they're going to try to figure out a whole thing to do. The real issue, though, is if you have names and photographs, which they say they have to, that's how you build trust. That's how they're not couch surfing. I don't know how you're going to not fall into a kind of a trap where you just have people who are who have biases, whether they're even explicit or implicit. I've also heard reports, if anyone really wants to read about this, you can go on Twitter and find hashtag Airbnb while black. You know, these horrible stories of people, even if they do get a booking, they'll have the cops called on them because they're the neighbors of the unit are like, those people aren't supposed to be here, so we're going to call the police.
They don't blend in.
They don't, they're not, they don't, they seem suspicious. Why are they like fumbling at that door or whatever? And you're just like, this is horrible. And to me, you know, the thing that I always come back to is we would hopefully in today's day and age not allow a Marriott to turn down 15% of the black people to walk through its doors. That would just totally be unacceptable. Airbnb, it's happening right now. You know, what is the kind of response to that that the company should have, and honestly, all sorts of levels of government need to have? You know, there are provisions of the Fair Housing Act, the Civil Rights Act, that are maybe applicable, that should be applicable, holding some of these companies responsible, because it's totally unacceptable. It's totally unacceptable that sort of discrimination happens. And in a place like New Orleans, where we know that the racial distribution of hosts is not emblematic of our city, mm-hmm. that the people who are most able to take advantage of these platforms are the people, honestly, maybe don't need the money the most, and live in certain neighborhoods, have access to property, are able to manage property. For people who are really rent burdened, for all the people who actually need the money to pay their rent,
stay in their homes,
that's not really an option for them. Mm-hmm. So there is a pretty big equity issue that we need to kind of confront about what are we really trying to do, and who are we kind of trying to help when we come up with these rules?
Yeah. And this is kind of interacts with the self-image that's promoted by these companies. I would say some of them, you know, are like maybe HomeAway aren't quite as ferocious about maintaining their image of, well, you know, we're just a neighborhood person, you know, and that there's a stereotype of, mm-hmm. it is someone that you will meet, and it's someone who will be your guide through, yep. the real New Orleans,
yep.
and you live with them, right? And all this, and the numbers don't always back that up about who, you know, who is actually renting out to you.
No, not at all. And I mean, again, there's every story you can find. You know, I'm not going to say that this never happens and this doesn't exist. Of course it does. The issue is kind of, where are we drawing the boundaries of this, and what is going to be kind of an acceptable use and what isn't? And there are certain types of hosting that don't have a lot of accountability and don't live up to its own rhetoric, right? That doesn't do a lot to kind of further people's understanding of this great city. And also you get into a density question, which is, if there are hundreds or thousands of these in some neighborhoods, does that neighborhood even exist totally if no one like really lives there, right? That's what people in the French Quarter really complain about, is that if everything becomes kind of a vacation or tourism centric space, it's not really a neighborhood at that point. Then it's just kind of a open air tourist zone. And I agree and disagree with that on some level, but for neighborhoods that are not used to any sort of tourists at all, that is a huge change. It's a huge, huge change, and it's a big cultural change, I think, as well. And for a lot of places that have really strong cultures or want to preserve certain types of things, you know, if you're selling it as New Orleans is this funky city with Mardi Gras Indians or whatever, it's like, well, if all of them have been priced out to and replaced by tourists, like, oh, well, that's a big loss. It's a big loss. So, and it's hard because you can't micromanage. You can't micromanage what's in people's hearts. Like, you can't go and find hosts and say, like, how much do you really love New Orleans? Okay, now you get a permit. Like, that's not how things work. And so you then have to figure out what are the rules that are going to get you to these ends that are more, you know, more productive or ensure certain accountability. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some of the goals that the city has put out there to, as I learned at the teach-in Saturday night, that Mayor Mitch Landrieu has a plan to go from, I believe it's 9.8 million tourists per year that mm-hmm. happened in 2015 to 13.7 million in 2018, which is, of course, the 300-year anniversary of the city. And, you know, where are those nearly 4 million additional tourists going to stay? Where are they going to live? And, you know, that's a big question.
Good question. I mean, whether short-term rentals can really satisfy that, I'm not sure. I mean, if you think of, like I said, there's probably 5,000 listings in the city. That's probably, I don't know, 12,000 bedrooms or something. That's a significant number, but they're never all booked. And certain types of things will really realistically, logistically cannot go through Airbnb. You're not going to hold a 20,000 person doctor's conference and try to book, you know, every Airbnb in the city. It's just
true.
Logistically, you would just be like, I'm going to call the Hyatt and I'm going to be done. So, you know, I think tourism obviously is a big part of our economy here. I think, you know, and this is something that the talk on Saturday got into, is that's not the only economy in the world, right? And that, you know, the spin-off effects of that economy on the wages of people, on the opportunities for people, also hold people, a lot of people back. I mean, again, if you're making $7.25 an hour, your options are pretty limited in the city. And on some level, you know, this is a personal opinion about tourism planning especially, which is you can get a lot of tourists if your city's great. And if you are the government, I think it's more, in my perfect world, it'd be more important to focus on making your city great and making your city work for everyone. And tourists will come because of that. If you focus entirely on tourism, you're doing a lot of surface level work. And I think that's obviously easier, and it kind of has short-term rewards. But I don't think it necessarily gets at the kind of root of a lot of problems that people are really experiencing, not in this issue, but just in life, that they can't afford their homes, they can't find good jobs, they can't advance in their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a perfectly fine goal for the city, but, you know, we should also be planning to do a lot more things. And I know that the mayor does that. It's not a slam against the mayor, but just we should not use the number of tourists as a barometer as to how great New Orleans is at any given moment.
And bringing up the tourist economy, obviously one of the you know, main issues is affordability in the housing market here in mm-hmm. the city. And part of that strain is from the wages remaining the same as they have been for the last about 8-9 years, regardless of the inflation.
Yeah, so housing prices in New Orleans, I believe, are up 40% metro-wide since Katrina. Wages aren't up 40% metro-wide since Katrina, certainly for the vast majority of people. Supposedly, we're raising our minimum wage. Maybe we'll get stuck with a much higher federal minimum wage. But, yeah, I mean, again, if the government only really wants you to spend 33% of your income per year on housing, if you're making $7.25, if you multiply that out, it's like $250 a month. If you can find an apartment in New Orleans for $250 a month, good for you. But it's a real issue. You end up with people spending way more than 50% of their income just on housing, and a lot of the housing in New Orleans is really substandard, has major problems, leaks, mold, infestations.
Which is a result of the lack of enforcement of the policies that are already on the books.
Yeah, there's lack of enforcement. Certainly, there's also longstanding reasons. A lot of it was related to how money was distributed after Katrina. A lot of it went more to homeowners than to rental properties. For various reasons, both good and okay and not great. And also we just have a very old housing stock. You know, our buildings are generally older than in most cities. And so there is talk about trying to remedy some of that and have tenants have a little bit more rights than they currently do. Louisiana and New Orleans have very weak tenant rights, so you can be kicked out for almost nothing with very little notice. You can do month-to-month leases, which are more tightly controlled in other states. And so you actually hear these horror stories about people getting evicted to have a short-term rental take their place. And that's not, I don't think, a overwhelming narrative, but it happens. And that's very troubling. So in terms of, you know, the housing side, we need to, you know, not fall into a trap, though, I think, with a lot of our landlords, which is they can't afford to fix their problems in you know, their leakage or their infestations unless they're getting rental income. But those people really shouldn't live in that place because it's not safe for humans. And so if you can't live there and then those people aren't getting that rental income, then they can't fix it. So you have to make sure that it's a system that will actually fix the problems while also saying, like, oh, no, this is totally unacceptable. You need to actually remedy this. It's hard. It's a balancing act. But it's one that other cities have done. So, you know, we're not inventing something here. We just need to adapt something for our conditions and for the type of landlords that we have.
Sure. And I know this is outside of the purview of the City Planning Commission for meeting tomorrow at 1:30 on short-term rentals, but what tenants' rights do people have, you know? And what do other cities, you know, what kind of trajectory could we make in the city to improve our tenants' rights?
Well, I'm not the foremost expert on this, but, you know, in general, tenants in this city have very, very limited ability to influence their living situations. Landlords hold a lot of power here and the state. So I think, you know, there are things that I know the city government has talked about. There's ideas of a rental registry, which would force landlords to have inspections to register as a landlord and follow a regime like that. That was kind of talked about. It led to a lot of pushback by landlords, of course. There was a billboard up right on Poydras Street. There's like one billboard. There's two billboards. There's one on Poydras Street and one right by City Hall. I mean, if someone has like a weird political grievance, like that's the billboard they get. And there was one that was just all about like, you don't want the government entering your house, do you? And it's like, okay, friend. So that's one thing. I think that's probably going to be one of the big first pieces. And that's not inherently kind of a renter's rights or a tenant's rights, but it is a way to try to improve the stock of housing, which provides a kind of benefit, an obvious benefit to a lot of tenants. If you have some sort of grievance with your landlord, there are many great fair housing groups in the city who will point you in a direction and tell you, oh, we can help with that, or like, nope, that's Louisiana, that's, you're out of luck. So
yeah. So these are nonprofits. This is independent.
Yeah. The Fair Housing Action Center is probably a great place to start. The Greater New Orleans Fair Housing Action Center. Yes. Or Jane's Place too, and just, you know, start there. But in general, you know, you'll find that it's going to be a pretty frustrating ride compared to a lot of other states. New York State, for example, has a very, very strong tenant laws, and so they can do different things that we can't, and that plays out. And I think it's a shame because we do have so many renters in this city, and so many of them are really burdened by the rental situation here, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Jeffrey Goodman, urban planner here in New Orleans. This is News and Views program on WTUL New Orleans, 91.5 FM. We'll be coming up with Democracy Now! In the next hour. Thanks for listening.